News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 24th of September, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, a beautiful 70 degrees on a crisp fall day in Rochester, New York. It's time for Sound Bites. We're going to be bringing you, don't try this at home. I am a professional. We'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, all kinds of interesting things.
I got to tell you one thing.
Uh-oh.
If you've ever had this happen, because you're right near a busy street.
Right.
Well, as folks know, I live right on Empire. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I happened to wake up. My age, I do.
Yeah.
Just getting back into bed, settling down, and I hear this loud, long screech of a car hitting its brakes. And it's like, and I mean, this was going on for a good 10 seconds. This long, and then I didn't luckily hear any crash.
Right.
It's like, because you're startled because you're hearing these screeching and then nothing.
Right.
It's like, man, because that corner up where I live, Culver and Empire, more cars get hit there.
Oh, I bet.
Unbelievable. Well,
it's a weird intersection, too, with that other little road sticking
out. Yeah, the way Culver comes around, a lot of folks coming south on Culver go to make the left-hand turn onto Empire, and they don't realize because it's around a bend, these folks coming north on Culver are coming around fast, and I've seen at least 3 accidents already since I've lived there,
right,
where 2 cars just collapse, boom, and you hear it all the way down to my house. But last night, it just scared the heck out of me. You hear this long screech, and then nothing. It's like, whew.
Yeah. You don't know whether that's better or worse. I mean, if there's a crash, you've got your adrenaline up, you get dressed, you go down your
house. Yeah, go down the hill.
If there's crash, it's like, now what do I do with all this adrenaline?
I'm
just going to sit there and shake until it goes away.
And then you sit there, and now you got to try to go back to sleep.
Right, and that's hard. Well, the Commerce Department, I got to tell you this is great. God bless it. The U.S. Department of Commerce reported that 1,137 laptops have been lost or stolen since 2001.
Probably out of dorm rooms.
No, this is the U.S. Commerce Department, their own laptops.
Oh, their own laptops?
Yeah, have been stolen.
I thought they did a study.
1,137 laptops. They say, don't worry, though, only 249 of them contain some degree of personal data. The department couldn't determine whose data may have been on the machines, of course. It wasn't aware of any data having been used improperly. Well, that makes me certainly feel better. Unfortunately, the Census Bureau also lost 15 handheld computers used to gather survey data. As a result, the department is contacting 558 households. The risk of the data being misused was extremely low, they said.
Well, nowadays, with laptops being so small and compact and light, I mean, that's why I tell folks that are, because lately we've been selling a lot of laptops for kids going off to college.
Yep.
I tell them, you got to get a locking system, because if they leave their dorm room open, or even folks at work, you leave your computer alone or overnight, it's nothing to just quick unhook it, throw it into a backpack or anything else. You wouldn't know. It's gone.
Right. I tell students that all the time. I unplug everything, pop it in my backpack. And one student said, well, but now you don't have any of the cords. I said, I can go to any of the superstores and buy a universal power plug for $40.
Yep.
I'll take a laptop for $40 all day long.
I might have spent $2,000 on.
I wonder how many of these are lost and stolen or just lost. Because I'm thinking, what would your employer do if you lost the computer they assigned you?
Well, right.
No, I didn't lose it. It got stolen. Yeah, that's okay.
Well, right. Or just they're sitting at home. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, lost 325 laptops. All of these had personal data on them. What I don't understand is why the government doesn't encrypt the data on those systems. It's easy enough to do to create an encrypted area of the hard drive. That's where you keep the data, and you have to have a password to get into it. You make it a tough password.
It's too hard.
Well, too stinking bad. Then get a different job.
It slows the machine down when you have to decrypt it to use it and encrypt it when you're done.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Slows the machine down now that you know you have 2 gigahertz in a laptop. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slows it down to 1.9 gigahertz.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I'm not happy.
I meant to do that. It goes along with I meant to back up.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's just like last week and. Was last week, the week before, Channel 13 was doing a survey on how folks were getting upset because businesses were coming in and checking the emails on people's machines.
Right.
And I wrote in and, you know, told them, and evidently they quoted me on it. It's, hello, folks, if you work at a business, that's not your computer.
Right.
Not unless you bought it. If you brought it, you know, and it's your actual computer, you don't own it. So anything on it is the company's.
Right.
But a lot of folks
just
know that's my personal email.
It doesn't make it a personal computer.
And you shouldn't be doing your own personal work on the company computer anyway.
Well, it's okay. You know, we have a policy at RIT, certainly in the College of Business. Look, you want to use it for personal stuff, obviously. You know, people use their phones for personal calls and like that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But don't expect that it's your personal machine. It belongs to RIT, belongs to the College of Business. You know, Saunders College has a right to say what happens to it.
And anything on it, they can look at.
That's right. I tell people all the time, I'm the systems administrator. There's nothing I can't see.
But these folks, you know, are just I get personal mail there. Well, too bad. It's you. If it's not, you know,
you
it's not your machine. Unless it's business related, it doesn't belong on there.
Right. And if they let you do that, that's great, but that doesn't mean it's secured or you know.
Or open for investigation.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick phone call. We have Patty from West Henrietta on the line. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Hi there. how you doing, Nick?
Peachy, how are you?
Very good. Got a Nano iPod, I don't know, about 8 months or so ago.
Congratulations.
Plugged it in, you know, put the software in, got iTunes. When I went on iTunes and plugged it in, it recognized it in the left column,
right,
if you will, okay? I got a brand new iPod, you know, the video, the whole bit, and in the directions it said, even if you have current software loaded on your machine, you should load this software as well. So I did it, loaded it, all went well and good, I guess, and it never recognizes the iPod in iTunes. Even when I take the old Nano and plug it in, it never comes up in the menu so I can just slide tunes into it anymore.
Right.
So I unloaded all the software and reloaded only the new software, still nothing.
Do you know what version of iTunes it is that you're installing?
Well, the software, you know, it had a date on it, and it was like June of 2006. So it's very, very new.
Oh, that's the iPod updater. That's not iTunes.
Okay. Gotcha.
There's two separate programs. And in fact, they've recently released iTunes 7 that adds more features and integrates the software updating program into the iTunes program itself. So you
might
want to try that.
Every time I turn it on, it says there is a new version of iTunes. Do you wish to update it now? And I always say yes.
Well, that takes you to the Apple website to download the new version of iTunes.
Patty,
then you have to install it.
Hold on. Stay on the line, and we'll talk to you when we come back. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. I told you.
And at 20 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, we have Patty on the line. She's been having Nano problems, iTunes problems, video, iPod problems, just, you know, problems.
Well, and she ran
Wait, Patty, are you still there?
Yes. Mark and Mindy? Nano.
Okay, can you just turn off his mic until we get his meds adjusted? Because... All right, go ahead, Steve.
Well, actually, she's run into a very common problem we see. When you launch the program and it says there's a new version available, do you want to update it? You say yes. It takes you to Apple's website. You then download the new version yourself and install the new version yourself.
And, oh, so it doesn't update it for you.
Well, the new version, iTunes 7, adds that auto-update feature in it because people were confusing and not getting the updates loaded manually. But it's a security issue that if the program can download and install something, that something, you know, may not be all that desirable. So you have to be a little more wary about what you're downloading. But yeah, the first thing you can try, Patty, is downloading iTunes 7 and installing that and see if that fixes the problem and lets the iPod be recognized. Now, are you running on a Mac or Windows?
Windows.
Okay. There are occasionally problems getting Windows to recognize the USB hard drive, which basically is what the iPod is. And then after it's recognized as a hard drive, iTunes will see it.
That's what I had to do for a client.
Yeah.
I was having problems getting it to see it. And what I actually wound up doing was reformatting the hard drive in the iPod. And then the software finally found it.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. No problem.
Well, that's what solved it for me was for this one particular client is I reformatted the hard drive in the Nano and then, you know, like Steve said, then did the updating and everything else, and it worked fine.
And yeah. Apple also has some pretty extensive how-to instructions and troubleshooting instructions on their website for each iPod.
Okay, so basically I'm not going to wait for the window to come up. I'm going to go right to the Apple website, look for the download for 7.0 and go from there.
Yep.
I don't have to delete the previous version?
It will delete it for you.
Okay.
Some people like to delete it manually just to be sure, but the new version will overwrite the old version.
But I'd try formatting the hard drive, too, since
well,
it's
a try
new
this
one.
First.
Yeah, but...
Oh, well, I wouldn't know how to format a hard drive from a hole in the wall.
It'll show up as a device.
Well, that's actually going to be one of the questions. If you open My Computer, do you get an F drive or a G drive that is the iPod hard drive?
Yes, and when I plug it in, you know, down in the right-hand corner, it does say, you know, recognizes your iPod, but it doesn't show it in iTunes.
Now, there's a program that right. I ran that came with the iPod that said the updater or formatting.
Well, that was iPod Software Restore. That's what she had mentioned that had the June date on it.
Yeah.
And you know the other thing that makes me mad? When I go in and check my status, it does show that I'm an administrator.
Yeah, that's good.
But when it asks me, iTunes is not your current default for playing music. Do you wish to change it? And I say yes. And then a box comes up and says, you do not have high enough access to change this.
Windows Media Player won't let you.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right.
Yeah, Windows Media Player insists on owning your system.
So how do I?
You don't.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
That doesn't really matter to me, actually. I thought maybe that was why it wasn't recognizing, because it wasn't the default. So just don't even worry about that.
Don't worry about that.
Okay. Alrighty, so I'm going to try to download 7 and wish for the best.
Yeah, and like I say, if that doesn't work, try reformatting it, Patty.
Well, but let us know.
Yeah.
All right.
Be curious.
Thanks, Patty. Our next caller is Brian from Honey Eye Falls. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I've got a Windows 98 computer that had a wireless adapter on it. I moved it. Don't really have a good signal, but I wanted to put a wired Ethernet adapter on it. And I can't find my Windows 98 CD, and every time I try to install the drivers, it asks me for it.
If you're really lucky, go to your C drive, Windows folder, Options folder, Cabs folder. Windows Options Cabs.
It used to be a big practice that when you were loading Windows 98, is you would create that folder and dump all the files that were on the CD that you would need to restore something would be in the Cabs folder.
And before that, it was the floppy disk. It was 75 floppy disks to install Windows.
That was a pain in the butt.
So you put it on the hard drive so you wouldn't have to keep track of where all those disks were.
Yeah, but so have it search in the Options Cab folder.
Okay. It's looking for a bunch of DLL files.
That's where they are.
That's where they are.
I can skip them, but when I skip them, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you can skip them, but it won't load the drivers.
Okay.
Yep.
If the cab files aren't there, can I go out and find them on another computer individually?
Well, if you got another 98 machine. Or if you got somebody else with Windows 98 still kicking around.
But there's no place on the internet where I could go.
No.
Microsoft legal place.
No, right.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's getting to be an interesting problem now. You know, people still have 98 machines, which, by the way, it's really a bad idea to go on the internet with Windows 98 machines. I'm sorry. It just is. They're just not secure anymore.
Well, that was the other thing. I had another client this week call and say, well, I'm thinking of taking my 98 machine and upgrading it. And, you know, it was a first generation Pentium 3. He goes, can I just change the motherboard? I go, well, with that, you got to change the motherboard. CPU, memory, and oh, power by the supply. Way, now we got to change the case.
Video
because,
card, yeah. case.
Because, you know, it takes a whole different power supply.
But other than that, yeah, not a
and
problem.
And then
yeah.
you got to buy the update for Windows, go from 98 up to Windows XP, and you got to buy this. I says, by the time you start putting all these pieces together, you might as well just get a whole new system. Because, you know, you start adding up the parts, and it's like...
We've had a couple of customers do that. One gentleman had a P2 at 400 megahertz and was running XP on it, and it was slow. So, well, yeah, it's going to be. Let's get you the new computer. So we got him into a new computer. Now, 2 months later, let's hook up the old computer so I have two of them to work with. Yeah, but you didn't like that one because it was so slow.
Yeah, right. Right. All right, listen, we're going to take another break. But we will be back. You're going to get some news. You're going to get some weather. You're going to get some sports. You're going to get all kinds of important things coming your way, as you always do on that. That's why you listen. It is 27 minutes after the hour. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Apparently.
This is the minute break for the bottom of the hour. That clock is now 7 minutes slow.
Yeah, right. Apparently we have, it is 27 minutes after the hour at this point.
You guys just do the talking, I'll do everything else. You know what I'm saying?
I know, I'm not saying that. I was waiting for you to say, I'm Rob Linton.
Well, you didn't give me any warning, I didn't have the microphone.
You had me saying, oh, for pity's sake.
And
look,
I said my name.
You're slow too, but you got there, and that's what counts. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Where can you find?
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's Soundbites. It's 32 minutes after the hour, 70 degrees, and we are back. Before we get back to the phones, a couple of things I want to talk about here. Apple has issued a fix for the wireless problem that they're not vulnerable to. Remember that? How they weren't vulnerable to the wireless break-in? And, well, they've issued a fix for that.
This is a different one.
It's the same three.
Wait a minute.
They released an update on Thursday to fix three critical flaws in their airport wireless drivers that could allow attackers to remotely take control of a desktop or laptop Mac OS X system. That's the same thing. Whether it's exactly the same one or not, it's the same thing. Apple denied that any of the flaws matched the one allegedly found by two security researchers and demonstrated in a video presentation at the Black Hat security briefings in August. But I believe this is what is known as picking nits. They were demonstrating that it's possible to break into a system using wireless, and Apple just released three patches that prevent people from breaking into a system using wireless. I fail to see the major distinction.
There is none.
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you. But Apple has issued those fixes, and they are, in fact, critical. If you are using wireless drivers on your Mac, you truly, truly need to download this. I know that Mac people get smug about their music, about their invulnerability, but you're not
like
invulnerable here.
Like that commercial?
Yeah, right.
With the guy
right.
with the glasses and the the nose. Right. Oh, I don't need those. You might want to keep those as a spare.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating to watch the reaction
they're
of
cute.
People to that.
They're cute.
Mac people think they're great commercials. PC bigots think they're arrogant and obnoxious.
I think they're kind of cute.
And a lot of
cute.
A lot of the actual television journalists are just saying how much they like John Hillerman Hedgeman and hate Justin Long.
Yeah, right. they picked a couple of great people, though. But
so the update, it's the 2006-05 update will automatically come down in your software update checks. You can manually run software update from the Apple menu to make sure that you download it now.
Yeah, if you've been not installing all those updates, you could seriously have a problem. You should definitely update those things. And just to even things out a little bit, let's talk about the Internet Explorer has yet another zero-day exploit. A zero-day exploit means that the very day that the problem is announced, there's an exploit out in the wild to take advantage of it, a virus or a worm. Now, what's interesting, of course, Microsoft only sends out their patches once a month on Patch Tuesday, Microsoft's monthly visitor. That's the only time they will send out those patches. So what that means is what a lot of virus writers do is they put out their new viruses the next day.
That Wednesday.
They've got an entire month before Microsoft patches.
Or they'll usually wait until a Thursday or Friday.
Right, so everybody's home for the weekend. 99%
of them wait until Thursday or Friday because they know the major updates for virus definitions and that come out on a Wednesday.
Right.
And then if they leak it out, say Thursday, Friday, they got the whole weekend.
Right. However, there is a new zero-day exploit, and there is an unofficial patch for it. It has appeared from the user community. This patch, which addresses the recent Internet Explorer exploit that can compromise even fully patched Microsoft machines, is being offered by a new group known as ZERT, the Zero Day Emergency Response Team. ZERT comprises volunteers and includes some well-known members of the security community with strong reverse engineering skills. Let me emphasize that the ZERT patch is unofficial and is not a substitute for any forthcoming patch from Microsoft. It may not even be completely compatible with any forthcoming patch from Microsoft, but it does offer immediate protection to vulnerable systems that are not likely to receive a patch from Microsoft for several weeks. Earlier this week, Microsoft confirmed that a new exploit capable of compromising fully patched Windows systems had indeed been seen in the wild. Now, those of us who are Linux users like I am, or Mac users like Steve is, are chuckling up our sleeves at this one. But all you Windows people truly need to be worried about this. Microsoft, again, normally only patches on a slow monthly cycle. So you, if you don't put this unofficial patch in from ZERT, you will be vulnerable for most of a month. That's a sad but true fact.
And for me, you know what it means?
More work.
Job security.
You love this. You're laughing up your sleeve, too.
Well, not that I laugh at it, but, you know, I mean, so many folks, we constantly, week after week, tell them, you know, to do these updates and everything else, and then they're either probably coming to Steve or I, sitting there saying, well, I got it. Did you do that? Well, I meant to.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, well, too bad.
That doesn't buy the farm.
Yeah, exactly. Our next caller is Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Hey, guys, I had a computer that had a virus not too long ago, and I got rid of that. But one of the things that clued me in that I had a virus is that when I was booting up occasionally, the PC would lock up. Particularly, like, I'd come up to a page where we've got four accounts in our family.
Right.
And it wouldn't allow us to get into any of the accounts. It would lock up right at that point. So we got rid of the virus, and now occasionally it still does that. So it may not have been related to the virus after all.
Did you also run spyware cleaners?
Yeah, ran all the spyware cleaners. It's on a Roadrunner account, and Computer Associates helped me get rid of the virus that took over my machine.
But have you run, like, Adaware or SpyBot?
Yep, ran them both.
Have you danced the entire security tango?
Yep, did that and did it twice.
Okay.
So I'm just, it's kind of a weird thing, and I can't figure out why it does that. And then I have to, the only way I can start it over is by basically, you know, I can't even turn the machine off. I have to unplug it, you know, and then plug it back in.
So it won't shut down at all?
No, it won't even shut down, because if I press the on-off button, it won't do anything.
All right, here's the thing. But it'll boot up okay.
It does boot up okay.
Okay, there. If you go into the Soundbites forum,
uh-huh,
one of the folks up there graciously put up a link to this shutdown issue. What happens is with so many users, Windows gets confused. And it's sitting there and it's waiting for things to finish up to finally where sometimes it just locks up totally or will take quite a long time for finally to shut down. So in there is, in one of the forums, it's what the guy's got wrong or the current one. Check and see, because there is, I believe, a link there. So if not, email me and I can email it to you.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco at 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Soundbites, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
It is 45 minutes after the hour. Give us a call. You know the numbers, 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code. 800-295-1180 if on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, you Verizon Wireless customers, you can give us a call at Star 1180. We're here waiting to hear from you.
Well, you know, as we were talking before, you know, I built you a new system.
I love my new system.
But, of course, you know, just as that's what I love about our field. You know, just as you get something brand new.
Well, I was going to tell everybody. Yeah.
Is going to be something always different.
Yeah, I love just bought a system, so there's something clearly new and better
and
coming
out.
And
that right out, coming out right now, they haven't given a firm date, is the new Quad 4 chip.
Which quad chips.
Yeah, the quad chip.
Wow.
They call it the Q4. And it's literally going to have four processors on one chip. The new motherboards to support this is going to be able to support 8 SATA drives.
Nice.
That is getting unbelievable. The other thing I got to tell folks.
Well, see, it used to be you didn't need to have. You used to have a lot of hard drive bays because, you know, 1 gig was a big hard drive.
Right.
Now, you know, 500 gigs is a medium hard drive, so
right.
1 or 2 bays is enough.
Well, the other thing, though, folks have to be worried about in this upcoming season of buying computers. A lot of the big manufacturers are doing away with the parallel port. So if you've got, you know, you're expecting to get a new machine and still use that old printer, you're going to probably have to get Belkin makes an adapter where it'll take you from the parallel connector down to a USB port.
Well, the adapter costs as much as a new USB printer does.
Yeah, right.
In fact, and a lot of the new printers don't have parallel ports on them either. They're USB only.
Yeah. Right. Well, like I say, though, a lot of these folks that are getting new machines thinking they're going to hang on to their old printer, they're going to be disappointed when they find out there's no place to hook up that old parallel port, because that's gone bye-bye.
One of the things that we're running into is general annoyance about the cost of inkjet cartridge refills and replacement kits.
Right.
That you buy the printer for $50 and it costs you $60 to replace the ink.
Yeah. Well.
Printer ink runs on average about $4,000 a gallon.
Thank heaven I don't fill my car with that.
Yeah, that $20 cartridge you buy for your printer is 0.05 ounces.
Right. Yeah. All right. We're gonna let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Keith from Farmington, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
I got two questions. My neighbor, I helped him set up an in-home network between his laptop and his PC.
Mm-hmm.
Everything went fine. He turns on his laptop, and you go to start, and then you go to my network settings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it reads what files are shared on his and what files he can see on his PC.
Right.
Okay? You go to the PC, and we set it up by sharing the folders. We can't, and you go to start, it doesn't show up as my network settings on there.
Because, the network settings, what you got to do is if you right-click on the start button, go to properties.
Yeah.
And then on that first tab, you can say custom, and then you can go to, here, I can do this, wait a minute. And if you go into properties and then you go under customize and then under advanced, you can scroll down that advanced list and the my networking isn't checked. So check it and then.
Okay, all right, I can figure it out from there. Thank you. Another question.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a new computer. It's amazing how cheap they are at what they do versus.
Yeah.
I bought an Apple IIc. I wish I still had it for $2,500 when it came out. It's an antique if I still have it. But the question is, I bought a new system. It came with an HP printer that has a different type of ink. They call it Versa or something like that. It starts with a V.
Okay.
Is that ink any better than the other inkjet? And what's the difference between the new HP ink and how does Kodak get the... I have a docking printer that prints out the best pictures I've ever seen. But what type of system is it on the docking station that runs off of a ribbon, you might say?
That is a... Time for commercial. That's a Dysub printer.
Yeah.
And that gives you much better quality, but at a higher consumable cost. HP uses Vivera ink, which is just their brand for brighter, sharper, crisper, better.
Color.
Epson calls theirs DuraBright. Every printer manufacturer
Something
has one.
Something different to make them stand out.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 50 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, give us a call. It's 222-1180, 800-295-1180, or, of course, star 1180.
This new format
Verizon
is
wireless
weird to
customers.
Get used to.
Yes, and we'll get there, but
we'll
we're
get
not
there.
There.
Rob just has to jump up and down a little louder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm waving my hands. I'm, you know.
We're just excited to see us.
We don't ever look at you or pay attention to you. I apologize.
Uh-huh.
We should, of course, because you're sitting there working hard and shoveling the coal and we're just here in the hot tub relaxing. Uh-huh. We're just having a good time.
Well, the funny part about it is you guys are just little chatty Cathys in there. You just talk, and you normally listen to the...
we're listening for the
for
bump.
The stuff before right. The other stuff, and it's like, you know, I'm like, come on!
Right. Well, listen, a shared music abuse bug has hit iTunes. There's a vulnerability in Apple's popular iTunes application, which might be exploited to interfere with shared music downloads. This is not huge, but it's out there. The glitch is in iTunes 6. So those of you who've updated to iTunes 7, as Patty's going to do right now, is probably in the middle of doing right now, should be okay. It involves a failure to authenticate the source of shared music lists received via multicast, and it is currently unpatched. iTunes shared music lets users create a playlist for songs in their PC and to share them across a network, a function that only works if copy protection restrictions are absent. So if you have non-copy protected, if you have machines that, as they're saying now, if you have music that is not infested with copy protection, you can share that music. The problem is the vulnerability could kill an existing stream without authorization. It could also change the list, creating a chaotic environment. One of the things that could happen but hasn't happened yet is it could change the list so that you're suddenly getting music from somewhere else, and that music could be a virus.
There was an interesting change that happened in the first versions of iTunes 6 that had music sharing on. It worked through the internet, so a lot of people at work would log into their home computer to share their music. That also meant that people who didn't own the music could log into and get the music.
Right.
So Apple patched what they considered a hole, so now the iTunes music sharing only works on your local network.
Right. Right. So it's a lot less of a vulnerability now, but it's still out there. And if you're still on iTunes 6, upgrade and solve the problem.
And local network these days often means a guy sitting in a car in front of your house tapped into your wireless.
Exactly. You don't want any of that happening, so definitely get out there and make sure... you've got the latest version of iTunes. We got time for a call, and we've got Jenny from Pittsford on the line. Welcome, Jenny. What's your question? Jenny or Ginny?
It's Ginny.
Oh, Ginny. Sorry,
yes,
Ginny.
That's okay, Nick. How are you this morning?
Peachy, how are you?
Very well, thank you. I wanted to ask you if you have heard of a software program called Visual Zone.
Visual Zone?
Yes. It's supposed to work with a zone alarm if an intruder gets in. Zone alarm doesn't tell you much about the intruder, but this visual zone is supposed to trace it and let you know the IP address, the physical location, and then you in turn can report it to an internet storm center.
Ah.
Yeah, most of the average folks don't know how to do any of that.
Yeah.
So it's oftentimes... The crackers who break into systems do it from someone else's computer, so you're getting the wrong address anyway.
Ah.
But, there's a couple of different programs like that.
Visual Zone looks like a pretty neat one. I have not had any experience with it yet, though.
Do you think it's safe?
Boy, it sure does. It sure does look it.
You know, if that's... I don't know how much time you want to spend, you know, trying to track down some of these folks, because, you know, they'll just go somewhere else looking, and trying to catch them is so hard because usually they're in third world countries.
And oftentimes they'll hack into a computer, send out a million junk mails, and then disappear. So it doesn't matter that you back.
And
the
email address is probably bogus anyways. Or, you know, like you say, who knows if they've hijacked somebody else's computer from a various virus.
Yeah. And but it does look safe. Some of the places that I trust seem to think it's fine.
Okay.
I'm finding that from three or four different companies, though, so I'm trying to find who actually makes it, not just people selling it.
Right.
Yes, it is a free version also.
Right, visualizesoftware.com.
Okay,
right,
great.
And WilderSecurity.com is selling it, and XDesignNet.com is selling it.
Right.
And well, it's not selling it, but talking about it and make it available for download.
Right.
Okay. Well, great. I appreciate your opinion.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's exactly why we're here. We're here to give you our opinion. We have three people, so you will generally get four separate opinions.
Mm-hmm.
At least. Rob's in the other room. His opinion, we're not allowed to put his opinion on the air because his opinion is always both rude and often correct. So,
did you see the logo for Visualized Software as the all-seeing eye in the Masonic Pyramid?
Yeah.
And, I don't know if I like that.
Yeah,
I know. Wow. I'm not sure. Right. Not sure that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting little piece of software. Basically, what it is, it's a visual trace route, it looks like. So, it looks like it traces where that packet is actually coming from.
But,
systems will tell you where they live as part of many of the nodes out on the internet will tell you where they live as part of what they do. So you can fairly regularly tell where something is going. That's not as likely as it used to be. A lot of places are hiding where they are to prevent them from being traced by hackers, but they're out there.
Or law enforcement.
Or law enforcement, yeah. I suppose. Yeah, yeah. We are going to take another break. It is time for news, weather, sports, the important things of the day. We'll find out what's going out. We seem to have fluffy skies here, but the incredible Rob Jason will be telling us all about that in just a couple of minutes. We will be back on the other side of all of that with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back on the other side with a whole lot more soundbites. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? This is, after all, both the longest running and the greatest computer show in the known universe. And you know what that show is. Say it with me, everybody, all across America. Soundbites. And what station are we on? We are on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you are listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. We have a poll that we do every week. Last week's poll was about QuickTime movies. 304 of you voted, tying for 134th place. Thank you very much. There's now three at that point, thanks to each and every one of you who voted. 57% of you rarely view QuickTime movies online. 21% of you view them pretty often. 19% of you have no idea. And 10 of you view them almost exclusively. This week's poll is about a news item that we've got here. The U.S. Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, is pushing for new ISP laws. New laws regarding requiring internet service providers to retain access logs for longer periods, claiming the need to fight child pornography. Gonzalez has admitted that the new legislation might be intrusive and could have significant privacy implications for U.S. internet users, but he believes this is dwarfed by the need to fight child porn. He said, "We respect civil liberties, but we have to harmonize this so we can get more information. However, it has been shown time and again that forcing organizations to retain access logs can result in major abuses of privacy. The information is available by subpoena for many purposes beyond what the government's legislation originally intended. Child pornography is certainly a real threat on the internet, and I hate it, and it jeopardizes the safety of helpless children. But privacy concerns about the U.S. government and law enforcement watching innocent Americans, along with the erosion of civil liberties since September 11, 2001, continues to be a major issue in the United States. So our question is, and particularly there are already laws in place that let people get this information, law enforcement agencies. So the question is, should the ISPs keep all our private data in case the government wants to see it? The choices are yes, otherwise the child pornographers win. No, I treasure my privacy, and I don't care. I never do anything wrong. So far, we have 85 people who have voted. 78% of you say, no, I treasure my privacy. 16% of you say, I don't care. I never do anything wrong. And 5 of you have said, yes, otherwise the child pornographers win.
And so, yeah, this is one thing I'm very strong on. I mean, I've turned in 4 people already for child porn over the past, I think, 6-7 years. And, you know, God bless them. You know, I think it should totally be eliminated, you know, and anybody caught should be quartered and drawn and everything else. But we got to face the real world, folks. You know, it comes down to, you've got to monitor what your kids are doing. Child porn in third world countries, our government's not going to be able to stop it.
Right.
And it all falls, you know, you wait for one more thing for the government to do for you, they're not going to be able to do it because they can't stop these third world countries from putting it out. Because in their countries, it might be legal. It comes down to that the parent has to monitor and watch what your kids are doing on that computer. Right. They do not own it. You bought it for them. So take the responsibility and watch out what the hell they're doing. It's plain and simple as that.
Right. Well, when you're done voting,
you're
going to
want to
rant. You're going to want to rant. So click on underneath the poll itself is a yellow box, yellowish, and click on Give Us Your Opinion. It takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Hank.
Yeah. And it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
He's a mean, vicious, nasty, no good, baggy-eyed, marble-headed ignoramus.
Where you can actually rant up to 255 characters.
That's not enough for me.
I know. I've had several people going two, three, four along there, and that's okay. Please try to keep it a little bit short. Remember, brevity is the soul of wit. Profanity is boring and infantile, and it is better to say nothing than to be dull. And once you're there, please feel free to look around my website. I put out a newsletter 3 times a week, an emailed newsletter, with tips and tricks, rants and raves, questions and answers, interesting websites, all kinds of neat stuff. And, of course, I have my own set of forums and all kinds of other things that I put out there. It's pretty cheap to join, and we're all having a lot of fun on the stuff that I send out, so I'd love you to do that. And then when you're done with that, come on back to our website at soundbites.org and take a look at the forum, Son of the Niftiest People on Earth. Play around in there.
Oh, speaking of which.
But don't forget to go to my website at asknick.com. Oh, nothing!
Yeah.
All right.
Going back,
something there.
Talking about our website, though, as we discussed on that one caller that we had a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
About that shutdown issue. I apologize. It was
you
an
should.
Email. It was an email sent to me. I'm going to forward it on to Steve. He will put it up, and it addresses that shutdown issue. So we will have that link up later on today, hopefully, or within the next day or so.
Right. Excellent. All right.
Just sidebar.
All right. So let's go back to the phone, shall we? Our next caller is Bob from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. Great show. I have a question about Microsoft Works. I've installed a new printer, HP, and every time I go to print a document, it's a pop-up box that's out of memory with a big red dot with a white line, white cross through it.
How much memory you got in the machine, and what operating system are you running?
I'm using Internet Explorer. I don't remember how big it is.
No, I mean, is it XP or is it Windows 98?
Yes, XP.
And you don't know how much physical memory you got in the machine?
I don't remember.
It could be that the error message is correct and you need more memory.
Yeah, I mean, if you go into the control panel under system, It'll tell you how much memory you got.
The problem is nowadays, one of the reasons that printers are so inexpensive is they have no memory in them of their own. They require you to have enough memory in your computer to image the picture, the document that you're going to print. And then it uses your computer memory to do all of that before it sends it off. The problem is...
All that host processing.
The problem is the newer the printer, the fancier the printer, the more colors it has, the higher the resolution, the more memory it needs. So if you've only got 128K in your machine, or you've only got 256K in your machine, it is quite likely that you don't have enough memory to print anything out of that machine.
It is 256.
Yeah, it's very likely simply don't have enough memory.
Try a simple a WordPad text page, and that may work. Whereas,
type in a couple of, like, hello, my name is, and then just send it.
Whereas a page out of Internet Explorer, which is full of graphics and pictures and fonts, may not work.
Right, so you may find that the printer does indeed work, you just don't have enough memory to do what you want, and the only fix for that is adding more memory to your machine.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for the help.
There you go.
That's the whole problem.
I hate that nowadays you can't, well, you can, it's just a much more expensive printer, to buy a printer with memory actually in the printer to do the work.
Yeah, but even though running Windows XP with just 256, forget it.
And he must be a very patient man.
Well, he also said he's using Internet Explorer, so...
he's not only patient, but a daredevil. Bit of a daredevil.
You should switch to Firefox. It's a lot safer.
Right. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that is happening nowadays. It's the reason these things are so cheap is because you just don't have any memory in them. All right, our next caller is Tony from East Rochester. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. I'm having a situation where my keyboard seems to be not working properly. I'm trying to type in letters, and they're not coming up. Other things that, like my backspace, will print a slash or something like that. I tried to hook up a different keyboard to it. It didn't seem to work. The same thing happened. But in correlation, when I did, I was having a problem when I rebooted my computer. My floppy drive, it would not recognize that startup, and it set up one to continue. So I would continue without the floppy drive. And then I hooked up another keyboard to it, and the floppy drive loaded fine, but the keyboard didn't work. I'm not sure if this is a problem with the system, or do I have a virus or something of that nature.
Well, have you run antivirus software and everything else? Is that up to date?
I do have it on the Roadrunner antivirus and free virus.
It's kind of unlikely that this would be a virus.
Before he mentioned everything else, I was thinking maybe he's got the wrong language selected for his keyboard.
Or he's got Dvorak instead of
QWERTY,
Did you, the keyboard and mouse are plugged in the right outlets?
Yes, they are.
Because I've seen folks do that too. They switch them?
Would it work otherwise?
I did that myself. I was so mad at myself. I was setting up a new computer and a wireless keyboard and mouse, and I couldn't get the keyboard to work, and what's going on? So I plug a USB keyboard in, that was fine. So after the third time, I'm reaching down behind the desk to fiddle with the cables. Well, you jerk, you got them in backwards. See, we have to do that ourselves every once in a while. It keeps us humble.
Exactly. it wouldn't work at all. You would get no working, just like you did on that
other
keyboard.
Well, the mouse will work.
The mouse will work.
Yeah, the mouse will, believe it or not, work on the keyboard side, but the keyboard won't work on the mouse.
Right. So that could be a problem, but the rest of it, working and working improperly, could be one of several things. You may have the language setting incorrect in your system. You may also have it set for a Dvorak keyboard, which is a completely different keyboard layout than QWERTY.
Much more efficient. QWERTY was designed to slow you down so the mechanical typewriters didn't jam.
Actually, it's not that much more efficient, as it turns out.
Yeah.
It's not that much difference, but it's just different.
Yeah. A decent QWERTY typist can do more than 100 words a minute.
Right, but you have to be... Right.
Yeah.
It's more efficient. It doesn't help with carpal tunnel or that stuff, but it is more efficient. So check those things first. And if it's not that, then it is very possible that there is indeed something wrong with your motherboard.
Okay.
You can fix that by buying a USB keyboard if you have USB connectors on your system.
Okay.
And then removing the regular keyboard and plugging in USB instead.
Okay, that's a
an option. But you said there is a possibility of it being the motherboard. It's about three to four years old.
It could be that the PS2 ports on the motherboard are failing, and a fix for that is to get a USB keyboard and plug into the USB port.
Right.
Because I don't think anyone makes a PS2
just
expansion card.
Well, you got to make sure, though, if you're going to go to a PS2 keyboard, make sure in the BIOS that the USB keyboard feature is enabled, because normally by default it's disabled.
Okay. Now we have to enable it.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll try those. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right.
Let's
know
how you make out. It's a tricky one, you know. And
that's the kind of thing that's very hard to, and that's the reason that guys like you exist. I mean, that's why it's, you know, you bring something to a guy like you. You've not only got all kinds of parts you can do. You've had years of experience doing it. You know what probably is the problem. It's the troubleshooting skills that are the hardest really to deal with.
No, we're good.
Yeah. I don't know of anybody who offers troubleshooting classes to teach you the skills of troubleshooting. And I don't know that they're teachable.
There's a few books. See, most of it is experience. You had this problem and this fixed it. So the next time you have that problem, you know what's going to fix
it. That's right. The thing. Between Dan and I mean, you know, you're talking.
Well, that's the big thing about us here. Between the three of us, we've heard of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if not, we can at least.
If not, we have Google.
We have Google, exactly. But we also have at least, you know, we can extrapolate from a problem we have had and say, let's try this. Mm-hmm. You know, either we know what the solution is or we know what you should try first.
Yep.
To at least narrow the problem down. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. At 19 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we have another bit of interesting news here. It's yet another antitrust challenge for Microsoft. Symantec and Adobe have complained to the European Commission about Vista security and electronic document features. Two engineers at the security firm Symantec are coming to Brussels next week, pardon me, to discuss the antitrust threat posed, I can't say the word, Brussels, posed by to their company by the upcoming version of Microsoft's Windows dubbed Vista. The European Antitrust Regulator, also known as the European Commission, has warned Microsoft about the possible impact on competition of Vista's built-in security software. The regulators fear that by including a sophisticated antivirus program in Vista, this could have a similar effect to the bundling of Media Player with Windows XP. And as we know, 2.5 years ago, the Commission ruled that the bundling of Media Players into Windows was anti-competitive and ordered Microsoft to launch a second version of Windows without Media Player. It also fined the company nearly $634 million, or as Microsoft thinks of it, pocket change. Adobe Systems has told the European Union regulators that Microsoft should be banned from bundling in free competing software for reading and writing electronic documents into Vista. Symantec and Adobe's lobbying moves certainly come as no surprise. We'll see what happens. The European Commission seems to have a much stronger attitude about antitrust than the American commissions. So we'll see if indeed the European Union decides that Microsoft cannot sell Vista with those things bundled into it.
And you can win the most prestigious award for the most gratuitous use of the word Brussels in a serious screenplay.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Brussels. There we are. All right. We're back to the phones, and our next caller is Glenn from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Glenn. What's your question?
Oh, thank you. My question is, will the new Mac laptops boot up in Windows, and how does the disk work?
Yeah, one of the features of the new Intel-based Macs is that you can partition your hard drive and install Windows on a second partition. And then you can choose at startup time which OS you're going to boot from. So a typical dual boot, and I'm doing it,
that
PC users have done for years. Apple is currently having a free public preview of their boot camp software, which allows you to set up this dual boot system. And that software will be built into the next system, version 10.5. So when you boot into Windows, you get the full horsepower of the computer. There is another concept called virtualization and a program called Parallels Desktop that allows you to run Windows in a window on your Mac. So it's more convenient because you can see them both at the same time. You can more easily copy information between the Mac and Windows platforms. But it's a bit slower because then you're running two OSs at the same time. So in you can either dual boot and run one OS at a time and get each OS the full computer and run very fast, or run the virtualization and run them both at the same time.
I have to be honest, I have a laptop here that allows me to dual boot Windows and Linux. I can't tell you the last time I booted into Windows. I should do it once in a while just to update.
Yeah. So yes, you can dual boot Mac OS X or Windows XP and run either OS on the Macs.
Now, if I dual boot, can I see the files on either partition?
It depends. The Macintosh can see a Windows partition, so you can, while you're booted into the Macintosh, put files on the Windows side if you use the FAT32 disk format. On the Windows side, you cannot see the Mac partition because Windows doesn't know about Mac files or about Mac partitions. You can buy a program called Mac Drive that does allow Windows to read Macintosh disks and then see the Macintosh partition on your hard drive. The danger there is that any virus or anything you get in the Windows side could then affect the Mac side because it's just a drive letter like any other Windows drive.
And as you said, you have to format in FAT32, which is a lot less secure than the NTFS file system that comes native to XP.
If you format in NTFS, the Mac can see the NTFS volume but cannot write to it. It can read files off but cannot write to it until they update Samba to allow writing to NTFS volumes.
So what you really want to do is put three partitions on your system.
Right, Mac OS and data.
Right, right. The Mac.
Mac Windows. OS, Windows OS, and then a data partition.
Right.
Now, you were saying Mac 10.5 has some additional capabilities?
No, the bootcamp software will be built into System 10.5. Right now, it's a free public beta that you can download from Apple.
And when will 10.5 be out?
Sometime in the spring.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully. Right.
So you're on the bleeding edge at this point,
probably
Glenn.
Before Vista makes it out the way Microsoft
now,
is going.
Now.
He's right, though.
Well, it was the operating system before its time.
When Apple was working on Panther 10.3, all the news was talking about how the Mac OS is going to stack up against Microsoft's next operating system, Longhorn. And then 10.4 started coming out from Apple, and how's that going to stack up to the next operating system for Microsoft, Longhorn? And now we're talking about 10.5. Well, how's that going to stack up against the next operating system for Microsoft, Vista? So.
Right.
So we'll see how much longer it takes Windows to come out. And that was always kind of ironic that the news media were comparing the new release of the Macintosh against the next release of Windows, not the current release.
Right.
Because you know the Mac OS already does most of the stuff that's being touted as new and cool in Vista.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Did that even vaguely answer your question, Glenn? Okay, good. Our next caller is Brian from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, isn't it?
It is that.
I recently replaced my power supply, and ever since then, I can't get any AM station, which kills me for 1180. Somebody told me it's because it's not grounded. And every time I move the mouse, you can hear it and the computer. And then even if I have a transistor radio going in the room, it'll cause static on that. If it's true that it's ungrounded, is there any way to ground it?
Buy a different power supply that has a grounding cable on it.
Yeah, unfortunately, what it sounds like is you either got a bad one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Too. It's the ground loop hum that you can often hear, the 60 hertz hum. But static on the AM band is probably unshielded power supply. It's putting off too much EMI.
Can I put a cable, the wire from the power supply to the chassis or anything?
Wrap it in aluminum foil.
Well, yeah, you build loop. A small net. Out of paper clips.
You can sometimes, you know those ground eliminator plugs you can get?
Right.
That that if you have a three-pronged right. outlet, three-pronged
plug. That's so dangerous, though.
With only a two-pronged outlet? Yeah, right. if you take that ground eliminator terminal right. on that adapter, right. run that to the ground yourself. Hook it to a water pipe, so you're creating a ground,
okay.
and then run it up to your computer into a metal piece on the computer, so you're creating a ground. That might work.
Okay.
It may be easier just to buy a grounded power source.
Right. Yeah. The other part of the problem is this thing, if it's still sending out EMI into your machine, it's probably interfering with other things going on your machine and slowing that down, too, because it's causing problems and making it resend data all over the place. So really, in the long run, I don't know if this is a bad power supply or you just went inexpensive, but it really was not a good idea.
Okay.
Well, that can be one of the problems. An OEM, you know, original replacement power supply for a laptop is probably $100-$150.
Right.
You buy a cheap third-party one for $20 and find out why it's so cheap.
Well, for desktops, you can get decent ones, 400 watt for like decent ones, you know, for like $35 to $40 for a desktop.
Right. So, yeah, Brian, I think that's your problem, and your best bet is to just replace the power supply. Lesson learned, eat the money, you're done. Sorry.
If it is just brand new, take it back and say it doesn't work, and they'll give you a defective replacement. And if that one doesn't work, then it's something in the model and not actually broken.
Right. Our next caller is Brett from Newark, New York. Welcome, Brett.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Peachy, how's it going with you?
Pretty good. It turned out to be a real nice day.
Are you in Newark, New Jersey, or in Newark, New York?
Newark, New York.
And can we say, Rob, can we get the volume up a little bit on the calls? Those last three calls are really low.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, it's
what's your question, Brett?
Okay, I've got two computers, one in one room and one in another. I've got a router. Everything works fine. I'm thinking about networking my computers.
They already are networked.
Well,
if you have a router.
Well, I don't know. I got the net zero router. I can't send information from one computer to another. Is there a procedure I need to do
right,
that?
Right, that's called file sharing. Once you get the computers networked, which they already are, you can turn on file sharing.
Well, he's also got to make them within the same work group.
Yeah, so what is the procedure? Because like I said, my daughter can go on one computer and I can go on the other, and we can do our own things. But say I want to get a program on that one sent to my other computer.
You can't.
Well, you'll never be able to send a program, but you can share documents.
Okay, so what's the procedure?
Right-click on a folder that you want to share to the network and choose sharing.
And make sure, though, that both computers are within the same work group. And that's done under the control panel under system.
Older Windows used to default to work group, and the newer Windows default to home.
MS Home.
MS Home.
What operating systems are these two machines?
XP Home.
Both of them?
Yes, sir.
You can do it then.
Then the work group is already the same. Yep.
So all you need to do is right-click on any folder.
Okay.
And you'll get a little drop-down menu and select sharing from that.
And then in that window, there's a box that says share this folder to the network.
Okay, and when I'm sharing it to the network, I'm not sharing it to all these strangers out in wherever. I'm just sharing it to my computer, right?
It should stop at the router. So all the machines on your side of the router. So if you plugged in only you and your daughter's machine, they're the only two that'll see it. If you plug in a third machine, it'll see it. If a fourth machine, that'll see it. But it won't get out past the router onto the internet itself.
Oh, that's great.
There you go.
Hey, listen, guys, keep up the good work, okay?
Thank you. We'll try.
All right, bye-bye.
Have fun in Newark, New York. The lovely Newark, New York. Our next caller, Howard from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Howard. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
How are you?
I guess this one is for Steve. Glenn's question was a good segue in. The more I talk to people about switching over to the Mac, the more confused I get. I don't really care if I see Windows ever again. Although I've had I've had PCs for the past 10 years. My question is, on the new iMacs, if I don't want to see Windows, how can I get my PC software to work? The only one...
You can't.
I can't. Okay.
The other side of that coin is you don't need to, because 99% of the common PC programs already exist on the Macintosh. So you just run the Macintosh version of it.
Okay, what about Word? Because that's the only one I really need.
Word came out on the Macintosh first. Three or four years later, they wrote it for Windows.
Okay, so what program would I have to get?
Microsoft Word.
Or Mac.
You can buy a version of Microsoft Word for the Macintosh.
In fact, all the Macs come with a 30-day demo of the Microsoft Office suite.
Oh, great.
Alternately, if you don't want to pay for that, you can download OpenOffice, which is a free word processor that reads and writes Word documents.
I didn't know that worked for the Mac also.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Well, again, that was created under Unix. The Mac is Unix, so everything for Unix works on the Mac.
Yep, not almost a problem.
Okay, one last question. How much memory do I need, 1 gig or 2 gigs?
How much memory do you need? Half a gig. How much memory do you want? You know, 1 or 2 gigs, depending on what you're going to do with it. If you're going to, you know, edit feature-length videos, then 16 gigs. If you're just doing your basic home user stuff, home internet stuff, 1 gig is fine.
Okay.
But the more you have, the better off you are. The more memory you have, the more things you can have open simultaneously, the more stuff you can do without any stuff having to go back to the hard drive and wait. You're way better off with more memory.
And almost what's nice now with Apple is almost all of their models come with 1 gig minimum these days.
Well, I think this is true, though, for both operating systems.
Yeah. Every operating
both
system.
Both Mac and Windows XP.
And
the
Linux.
More you give it, the better it is.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. And that's one of the problems that we're, as we come into the Christmas season, folks, pay strict attention to the ads you read for computers. You will find lots of machines that only have 256 meg of RAM.
Or worse.
Or 128 meg of RAM.
Yeah, the 299 blue light special.
Right. Yep. And yes, it will boot Windows. And if all you want to play is solitaire, you win. But the minute you want to do something else, you will find that the machine is horribly underpowered because it spends all its time swapping to the hard drive. You need at least a half a gig of RAM, and better is at least a gig.
Steve brought up one good point, and it's getting a lot of people ticked off. One, there's, you know, because they're being told, well, it comes with Windows or Microsoft Office. Yeah, it does.
Demo.
It's a 60
drive.
Gig.
Yeah.
And then people get, this one lady got really mad at me. Well, it said that it came with it. Yes, that's a 60-day. Yeah, but it's there, and I should be able to use it.
For 60
well,
days.
Sorry, yep. For 60 days.
And then you have to buy it. Microsoft wants to get you suckered in. And that what they also have now is a student and teacher version, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
For $150, you get 3 licenses for Microsoft Office. So $50 per license. And if you're a student or teacher, parent, grandparent, or guardian of a student or teacher, which is everybody, you can buy this. You can legally get this student and teacher version of Microsoft Office. They want to sucker everyone in, get everyone hooked on Microsoft Office that isn't already.
Right.
And then when you get to business, you have to buy the real $400 Microsoft Office suite.
Right.
Which is the regular price of Microsoft Office.
Right. Or $700 if you want
Pro
and access and everything else. So, yeah. Or you can get that all free with OpenOffice, including the database and everything else.
Well, that's what I wound up recommending to this lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves it.
For Windows, the Microsoft Office suite is enough. For Macintosh, the AppleWorks suite is enough. Reads and writes Word and Excel files if you need it to.
Right.
And you know, they're under $100 on both sides. And that's pretty much all you need.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and Mina Francesco. At 39 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Hey, guess what? You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we've got...
Okay,
go ahead.
Can I jump in here? Promise not to kick any.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
All right, we had... one of the folks write into us, Bill from Greece, asking about, you know, with the upcoming season, like we've been talking about, different specs, want to know what you're running, what I'm running, what Steve's running. And basically what I personally say, and when you two guys jump in, I like to always say, get what you need.
Right.
You know, I mean.
And maybe a little bit better because.
Well, the thing of it is.
You never know what you're going to need next.
As my philosophy is. I want to sit down with the person and find out what they're going to do with it because I'm not going to sell you a Cadillac when all you need is a mid-sized car.
Right.
But with that, don't think it's going to be something watered down. Any of the systems I put together, it's with the potential to further grow with the system, whether you need to add more memory, additional hard drives, and everything else.
Right.
But I like to find out what the person's going to need because, again, I'm not going to sell you something if you're never going to use it.
Well, this, I think, is the key. If you're going to buy a laptop, max it as far as you can go, because mm-hmm. that's what you're going to get. But if you're going to get a desktop, now, for example, I just had Dave build me a desktop. I got way more system than I needed, but one of the things I told Dave was, I want 2 gigs of RAM, and I want as few RAM chips as possible. So if I want more RAM later on down the road, it's just adding chips right. as opposed to, oh, I got to throw away the bunch of 256.
That's another way that a lot of PCs are cheaper. There's only one or two slots in it.
Right.
So you if you want to add more RAM, you got to pull a chip out and throw it away.
Right. And I've got extra bays if I want to add another hard drive, or I can replace a hard drive, make it bigger, whatever I want to do. You've got that option later on down the road. I didn't need to spend all that money up front. I still got more, really kind of more than I need. But I didn't get as much as I could have because I can upgrade it later. That's the nice thing about a desktop. As long as you and the builder understand that you may want to upgrade at a later date and build it accordingly, then you're all set. Now, again, with laptops, it's entirely different. Pretty much what you buy is what you get.
Yeah, you can sometimes
what about the
upgrade.
Mac side?
Pretty much the same way. The biggest issue on the Mac is they have their consumer level and then their pro level.
Right.
And the consumer levels are the all-in-one. So the biggest question is, how big a screen do you want? The 17, the 20, or the 24? And that 24-inch right. screen is so sweet.
It's so pretty.
But yeah, you can.
And those 24-inch screens work on Windows and Linux boxes, don't they?
Well, actually, the 24-inch is an iMac.
The no, I meant the
right, the all-in-one. Right, right, right. They only have a 23-inch right. professional screen. Yeah. Well, they have a 20, a 23, and a 30 using a standard DVI connector. Yeah. So they do work on other platforms. But it's interesting now, they have a 24-inch iMac, which is a consumer machine, but their 23-inch Pro monitor. So we're expecting a 25-inch Pro monitor.
Right.
Just,
right. Right.
Just for marketing reasons. But yeah, what size screen do you want? Or you can go with the Mac Mini, which is very cheap. You know, starts at $600. For dual processor model, which is something you don't see in the PC market,
right?
Add your own monitor. So pick whatever size monitor you want, or use your existing monitor. A lot of people upgrading from an old computer already have a monitor.
Right, a 19-inch monitor is still going to do you yep. fine. Might as well use it.
Yep.
I'm getting folks that are doing dual monitors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's it. Used to be you wanted a 19-inch color monitor, it was $3,000. So you bought the 19-inch black and white monitor was $1,000, and a 13-inch color monitor was $1,000.
Right.
So you saved $1,000. And then for a long time, people were used to dual monitors because that was the way you had to go to be a lot cheaper. Now we're seeing, you know, 20-inch widescreen digital monitor for, you know, under $600 is
ridiculous.
Is ridiculous. And that's another big thing and confusion we run into in the Mac world is that all of Apple's monitors are digital. So they're brighter, sharper, crisper, faster
beautiful
response
color.
Time, beautiful color response. But they're about twice as expensive as an analog monitor. So you want cheap or you want good, you know, pick one.
Right, right, right.
And you look at digital monitors on the PC world, and it's the same thing.
It's the same price, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, yes, people often say, well, Macs are so much more expensive. Well, you've already skipped the low end on a Mac. When
yeah.
you buy a digital monitor, you're getting the high-end monitor. Now, you may say, well, I don't want that. But you know what? You stare at that monitor for 10 hours a day, and your eyes end up like mine. Now, I need a digital monitor just to be able to see the crisp.
The two biggest things to keep in mind when buying a computer is what size and sharpness and clarity of the monitor and how good a chair you have.
Exactly.
Don't
right.
buy the $40 cheap little rolly chair.
That's right. I get people all the time, man, I my shoulders hurt, my back hurts. You're sitting in a crappy chair, you're sitting at a crappy keyboard, and you're looking at a crappy monitor. What did you expect? You know, yep. I'm sorry, but what did you expect?
It is what it is.
You pay $1,000 for a decent chair.
Oh, tell me about that.
All your faculty have them at school, right?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We have folks on the line. We'll be getting to those, I promise, in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, at 49 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams.
Come back, everybody. You are listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, before we get back to the phones, which we'll do in 1 second, I want to say, all you hackers, fire up your little engines because, according to Microsoft, the next version, when Vista comes out, all of the versions will be shipped on a single DVD. Apparently, no CDs. It'll be DVDs. So if you have a CD reader now and no DVD, you can't upgrade to Vista. That's what they're saying right now. It's a feature called Windows Anytime Upgrade. The idea is to let customers more easily and directly upgrade to a higher edition of Vista from within their current edition. Users would be installing only the version of the operating system they had purchased, as the product key would be version specific. Versions range from starter to ultimate. Microsoft representatives denied that the Windows Anytime upgrade would prove an attractive target for hackers, saying Vista was the most secure version of Windows yet. That will pass without additional comment from us because we're going to go to Tom in Penfield. Welcome, Tom. What's your question? Tom?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear us?
Yep.
Okay.
I've got a home network with four computers on it.
Yes.
Two are wired into the router, and there are two wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a work group set up for that. Recently, I lost the two wireless computers from the work group. And when I do a search network places on the two wireless computers, I can't see my work group. I can see the router if it comes up as Linksys, and I can hook to that. But I can't get back.
Did you upgrade your Linksys router, or did you reboot it at any time?
I upgraded it a couple weeks ago, but I don't think I lost the computers out of the work group then. My computer, the main one, froze up a couple days ago, and I had to reboot it.
Mm-hmm.
I think after that happened...
No, it's likely that it happened during the upgrade, because that's been known to happen before.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is Linksys now gives you a choice. Wireless stuff can be in a different work group from the regular stuff, and you have to go back into the Linksys router and tell it to make sure that both the wireless and the wired sections are in the same network.
Okay.
Because they'll get two different address groups.
And a workaround for that is you can go to start, run, and do /, and then the IP address of the other computer. And
right.
Then it logs into the other computer without bothering through the work group.
Right.
Okay. See,
what happens basically is, let's say, and I'm making this up because I don't know exactly how it works in a Linksys, but you say the wired stuff is at 192.168.0. And the wireless is at 192.168.1. And they're basically two different networks, and they don't talk to each other.
As a security, you know,
right, so you can have a security, that's a security feature. You have to go back in and turn that off to make them all see each other.
So I can do that through Linksys, though? I can go.
Yeah, and I can't lead you right to it because, unfortunately, I don't have a Linksys.
Okay.
But I know that that's the way they work, and so you're going to have to go in there and start looking through the things and read them carefully, and you'll find it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, our next caller, Matt from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's your question?
Hi, I work in an area school district. It's a PC school. I would like to, I have a vision of having some iMacs as well. But of course, once you start mentioning that, you hear that you cannot hook it into the network.
Nonsense.
Completely wrong.
And I've always known that was nonsense, but I was wondering what you suggested about trying to devise some strategy as to defeat these PC people.
Don't mention the word Mac. Say, I'm getting a new computer. And I want to log into the network, and you can use the SMB protocol that all the PCs use for file sharing.
I should just be able to plug in my Mac and do my login?
Yep.
I've always thought that. Another thing they've always said is that it's not compatible with their virus software.
That's true, which
is true. You have to run Mac virus software.
Right.
You can't run Windows. And it's the same thing, you know, with any software. You need a Mac version of it.
But I could run that Mac. I could run that virus software on my Mac.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to bother the network.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it's an Exchange mail server, and I know that Macs can run Exchange.
Well, the Exchange client, either Apple's mail program or Microsoft's mail program, Entourage, part of Microsoft Office, will log into an Exchange mail server, no problem.
At RIT, we have Windows machines, Mac machines, and Linux machines, and Solaris. We have 100 different machines, all talking on the same network, all talking to the Exchange server, all exchanging information left and right all day long.
You probably have DEC servers and Unix servers.
Yeah, we got it all. So, Matt, the reality is it'll talk to everything it needs to talk to. You just need to know how to set it up. We are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Really, call early next time. That's we find that...
Post in the forums.
Right, and post in the forums. Remember to vote in our poll, and remember to check out AskNick.com for all of your newsletter needs. That would be AskNick.com. Thank you. Very nice.
And we will be back next week. It is 58 minutes after the hour. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. You will see all of us here back next week at the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening. See you next week.